March 26th, that's this Saturday, 2 p.m., for The Language Archive by Julia Cho. Come support Portland's only and first Asian American theater company. And you can find out more at theaterdiaspora.org. That's it for Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts. Thanks. And Janet Anderson, my engineer. Oh, she already cut me off. Okay.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Tim DeChristopher Lecture, Wielding the Power of Vulnerability, Thursday, April 7th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. Tim DeChristopher, as bitter 70, disrupted a Bureau of Land Management oil and gas auction in 2008 by outbidding oil companies for land parcels around Arches and Canyonlands National Parks in Utah. His actions led to a 21-month imprisonment. Again, that's a lecture by Tim DeChristopher titled Wielding the Power of Vulnerability, Thursday, April 7th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church, 1211 Southwest Main Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Music playing is Inshallah Dub by DJ Mad from Portland label Zam Zam Sounds, and this is Art Focus on KBOO Radio. My name is Andre Middleton. Thank you for joining us today. Today, my guest is Carl Anala. First up, some local art news. We Are Proud to Present has been extended through April 2nd at the Artist Repertory Theater. A multiracial cast of six idealistic actors sets out to improvise a story about the first colonial genocide of the 20th century in Africa, but get lost in the reality of what they're undertaking. The unusual presentation, humor, and inevitable discomfort of this provocative new play, directed by Kevin Jones, is happening now through April 2nd. Many shows will be followed by a post-play discussion. Visit the KBOO Art Focus show page to find the link to learn more. New Space Center Photography is pleased to host a traveling exhibition, Prison Obscura, curated by Pete Brook and organized by the Cantor Fitzgerald Gallery and Haverford College, PA. Exhibition dates April 1st through May 28th. Prison Obscura, curated by Peter Brock, sheds a light on the prison industrial complex as a whole by showcasing rarely seen surveillance, evidentiary, and prison-made photographs. The exhibition encourages visitors to ask why taxpaying prison funding citizens rarely get the chance to see such images and what roles such pictures play for those within the system. Next up, C3 and New Space Center for Photography is proud to present Sherita Town's residency, Our City in Stereo. Sherita uses the old medium of stereographs to investigate what's happening on the ground in what's been called the most gentrified city of the century, Portland, Oregon. Stereo views, an early form of three-dimensional photography, give viewers a sense of being there in the photographs themselves. The Regional Arts and Culture Council will be participating in a national study to measure the economic impact of nonprofit arts and culture organizations. RAC is seeking a team of 10 volunteers who can commit to providing a total of about 10 to 20 volunteer hours overall between April and November, approximately 1 to 2 hours a month, to help conduct the study in our region. Training and information session will be held on Tuesday, April 5th from 5:30 to 6:30 at the Regional Arts and Culture Council offices. So once again, this is Andre Middleton, the co-host of Art Focus Radio, and today I have with me Carl Anala in the studio. Hey, Carl, how are you doing today?
I'm good, Andre. How are you?
I'm pretty good, pretty good. Before we get started, I have to encourage all of our listeners to go please visit Carl's webpage at carlannala.carbonmade.com to see a collection of his work. Go. Now. Okay, so now that you're there, please click through some of his images. I have to let you know in advance that I found myself gravitating to the nature picture section of his webpage.
Thank you.
Oh, no, thank you. It was really great work. So now that I got that out of the way, Carl, please share a little bit of your background and how you discovered your need to be a creative artist.
Ooh, I don't know that I ever thought it wasn't going to be a possibility. You know what I mean? Maybe when I was a little kid, I thought of it more as a fallback when the mad scientist part fell through. You know, algebra happened, and I was like, oh, okay, well, art's still there for me, you know, because I definitely crapped out on algebra. I was told that, just get through to trig, you'll be fine.
You'll be
but
fine.
I was like, I'm not fine, I don't get this, whatever. So as a young person, I was aiming at being an artist. For quite a while, my parents were musicians, and so it wasn't as though they knew how to support a visual artist as much as they, you know, knew it was a possibility. So for me, I think it was more of a struggle in a way. And I think, you know, the words that I heard as a young person from somebody who was teaching art that was like, persistence is the most important part, were like the hard words to hear, but true. Right? You know, I think I've struggled to become a painter against like the better advice to maybe do sculpture or new media or video or something like that, but I've sort of stuck with it. And I guess my drive for a lot of it is just the desire to see something else, you know, that I'm not being presented with. And maybe for me that also operates well in almost a little more of a vacuum too.
Okay.
You know, like if I, when I was very young, I went to New York City and I was thinking, oh, maybe I'll just move here. And I got the feeling that everything was out there. Everything was being done. Everything was still possible, but there was so much. I was sort of like, well, I could just go look at art. I don't have to make any of it.
You right.
know? And it came sort of jaunting back to Portland where I, you know, sort of felt like I knew most everybody. Now you can still meet people, right? Like the owner of Union Knot,
right.
Heidi and her daughter Natasha are people that I probably should have known for the last 30 years and haven't.
Oh, wow.
You know, because of my involvement in the music scene and the art scene, which has sort of been sort of orbiting around. I'm not in the inner orbit of the gallery scene and the Pearl like some friends of mine, but it seems like they just know everybody else that I know and or I don't know
right.
in town. But so I don't think Portland's still completely discovered, you know.
No, it isn't.
For everybody or anybody. You know, people keep talking about their outrage with gentrification and stuff like that, and I can get behind that. I also feel like, well, maybe there'll be more people to buy art too.
Nice.
With the changes, you know. I'm trying to look, even though I am sort of a misanthropic Gen Xer, I still try to look for a little silver thread in
nice.
That, you know.
Right. It's funny you mentioned that Union Knot because I've known Heidi through. I used to work at La Luna.
Okay, yeah. You look so familiar to me when we met the other day. I was like, where is it? You know, where in my history?
Yeah, so I've known Heidi and Natasha, oh my God, going on 20, 25 years.
Wow.
And Natasha just had a baby. Yep, so
okay,
we're really
wow.
thrilled to
yeah.
hear about that.
Yeah.
But Union Knot is a very unique space. You know, that's one thing I love about Portland is that even though there is a Pearl District, art is happening throughout the city at so many different levels, and people are making space. They're, you know, making their space available to for people that are passing by. I mean, right now, Union Knot, it's literally in the corner of Union and Knot.
Yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
now MLK and Knot. But, you know, but right between the Nike outlet store and Portland Community Media, you'd have no idea this is really quaint little gallery right next to a barbershop of all places.
Right, next to a barbershop and another little gallery as well.
There's
two little galleries, and I sort of think like, oh, is this a little district-y thing, you know? And I like the, you know, like the way it sort of feels still, like new.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not something everybody knows about. So there's a little bit of like, ooh, what's that? You know, cachet
right.
to that feels like you know, it's not that as though I've been showing my art here for 30 years, which I have, but like it's new again, you know.
It's so funny you should use the word new. I often see Portland as still being relatively uncharted. I mean, I think that a lot of people who have come to Portland from around the world, not around the country, they know that there's still some unfound. There's still some raw dirt. There's still some, you know, there's still a tree or a log that no one has walked over yet. And that brings me back to some of your work. I have to admit, I was really, really drawn to your abstracts.
Thank you.
And the question I want to make sure I asked you was, when I look at a piece like, let's say, Blue Composition 3. Mm-hmm. One thing I love about abstract paintings in particular is the way that one's perspective can literally change what the work looks like. You know,
yes.
At one moment, it looks like an urban cityscape, but then at another level, it reminded me of just, you know, cellular mitosis and things dividing and replicating. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. When you're painting, when you're in the middle of a piece, do you have a singular vision that you're going to, or does your perspective change in the midst of your creation?
I would say that both are probably true. Like in the beginning, there is some sort of vision or, you know, and in the previous work I did with the natural world, I generally work from photographs that I take on little hikes. My wife and I go hiking and she sort of ditches me and I take some pictures and run up to her and get some more pictures. So they're more like, almost more like tourist snapshots in a way, right? So that's like having that vision, right?
Right.
And then in the process of painting that, I try to sort of break through that and ignore the photograph a little bit for whatever the result will be. But working in the abstract, it was sort of like the most natural organic progression. It wasn't a choice that was forced for me, like, oh, I'm going to start painting abstract and I know what that is because I've been to art school, blah, 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 blah. It was more like I've painted so many of these nature pictures that I should have like a body knowledge of how a picture is made, right? And so like my subconscious should be able to take over and create something interesting based on what I know about the rhythms of nature from remaking photographs by hand, let's say.
Right.
So with those abstract paintings like Blue Composition, I more had the idea I wanted this to be mostly in the blue spectrum, like the sky. The skies I've been making have a similar pattern to those paintings, or the trees or the bark. And so I treat those as an overall painting with just sort of a sense in mind to aim at, right? Hmm. And so like an abstract expressionist, one mark might follow another and inform the next. But because it looks such like a matrix, the paintings themselves, right? I sort of think of Dave shutting down Hal in 2001. You know, like,
right?
Don't do that, Carl. You know, Dave.
But you're still doing it.
I'm still doing it. I'm still going to finish the painting, right?
Right.
And so my order of that painting is almost entirely random, sort of based on what I'm kind of letting my body do with between me and the canvas, and then the space gradually gets filled up. And then I have to go back and sort of reinforce elements, and that's when I start to push-pull slightly with pictorial space.
Right.
Right? Because I know that the sort of best purist abstraction and minimalism don't depict space whatsoever, but I sort of am one of those rule breakers rule kind of people, you know. So I'm aware of those things and I want to play with them, but so that's where it starts to get a little more exciting for me, and I sort of think of it like a weird, you know, Albers, you know, on ayahuasca or something. Gotcha. You know what I mean?
It's funny hearing you talk about how your process for hiking, photography, mm-hmm. coming back and recreating and going through a different perspective. I had a bit of an aha moment just now. It's like, wow, now that I think about it from my perspective, your newer work almost seems like a subatomic macular zooming in to some of the layers within your nature work.
Right.
I mean, you think about, you know, when I think about, you know, some of the paintings where they'd have trees and clouds, and when you mentioned the blue and thinking about the sky, I said, huh, there is a certain matrix, almost digital, you know, kind of like order to your newer work. And as a continuation, I said to me, wow, if you just zoomed in and could zoom through the bark into that tree limb, you'd see all these cells.
Yes, that's so close to really how it is. True. I think about things like that, like data piling itself up, you know, and that those are great metaphors for the work. I'm not super consciously thinking about it when it's going on, but that's definitely the result. And it's a very metaphoric cycle in that I see that the forest that we know is connected by like little things like mycelium that help everything connect and communicate is such a metaphor for our social networks today and then our other structures, our city structures, so that we mirror the woods in our cities and our communities. And that then you look down towards the finer levels where you start to see the fractals and the math and the cells, and you get that kind of picture that the abstract works are.
Exactly.
And the oddly, they look like our world reflected in buildings sometimes too.
Right.
Yeah. And so, but all that is sort of like after the fact, like aha realizations, right? Like that's not like where I was going when I started
There. Oh, yeah. No doubt. And I mean, to be honest, I mean, even if you were, I'm talking like genius level, you know, to be able to consider all those permutations. So it makes complete sense that when you step back and you can see the body of work of your recent work, that's when it all starts to come in focus. Because like when you're right on top of a painting, you don't have the perspective of having 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 of these paintings.
Yeah.
No, that's really, really cool.
Yeah.
So my next question to follow up with that last one was, so what are some of the experiences aside from, you know, these hikes and, you know, that have had a real impact on your work? I mean, you've got a varied background of creativity between music, commercial work, dance. How is this all kind of forming Carl?
Yeah, whoa, that's a big question, because I have done a lot of things, and been a lot of hats and different people. Let me see how to get at this question. I think that I'm always gravitating towards the darkness.
Okay.
Like the previous bodies of work up until this woodsy stuff were mostly figurative, psychologically tight, spatially wise, Bose, you know, like gritty, dirty pictures of, you know, cabarets, you know, surrealism. I did these like collages of just like all muscles from magazines and just placed mouths on them, and you just have, you know, Belmer times, Giger times,
right,
you know, Bacon,
to the nth degree.
You know, and you're like, you know, delving down into that and sort of realizing, well, am I trying too hard? Is this trying too hard? And I started doing pictures of some of these odd things in the woods, mm-hmm. to somehow try to come up with something. Maybe I was trying to make a album cover for a black metal record or something like that. And I did a few that were without any of the strange objects or people, that just had the woods. And I got this like feeling like, oh, that darkness that I'm aiming at is still there. But I don't need to make it an overt choice, right? And maybe this is something that I've having a little moment with a little professor on my shoulder, right? You know, saying like, you don't have to make that bullet look really like a penis.
Right.
It's saying it already. And I'm like, no, it looks like it, you know, pulling the Giger thing. But.
Right. So that makes me think about something, you know, when you were talking, I was thinking about Guillermo del Toro, and I was thinking about Andre Serrano, and mm-hmm, thinking mm-hmm, how to some mm-hmm, degree, mm-hmm. right, those who can see the darkness or are not afraid of the darkness or are willing to depict the darkness to show everybody else, hey, guess what? Despite all the beauty and light around us, the darkness is there. But what made me think about Guillermo del Toro was that in one of his films, Pan's Labyrinth, even within that forest setting, there is a layer. There is an undercurrent, and dark is technically not so much bad or evil. It is just the absence of light. And I think that your work seems to try and shine a light on it, not so much to brighten it, but to illuminate.
Right. And what I realized as a more mature person is that you have to have a contrast to show off either quality, right?
Exactly.
So seeing the dappled light in my paintings of like the path going out towards, let's say, Ecola Park, Indian Head, or somewhere like that, you really have that sense of the light first, right? That's what people see, but they don't. They may not think that my sense of darkness is so strong. That's why I can show that.
Right.
Okay. So But for me, I still aim for that darkness, right? And so the with some of the last paintings I did, they were all like scenes of a ravine after a burn had grown back for a few years, right? Okay. So there's a little renewal there, but a lot of it's that burly, gnarly trees that are fallen and burnt. And I just like the spiky shapes and all that stuff. And so I'm just following my own compass, really, you know. But I got a lot of comments that were like, you know, oh, your trees are dead. And I was sort of like, and?
Right.
Right, you know?
Yeah.
But it was always, but then here I'm, you know, I'm in a context of a sale, you know, not really a bunch of us hanging out at, you know, Ringler's Annex talking about art. And I was like, oh, right. Okay, that is my darkness coming through. Right. Well, what, okay, well, then that, well, what is it about that?
But in all fairness, that tree really isn't dead because there's life teeming within that tree getting ready to start the cycle all over again.
Sure, sure, sure. But the ownership of the experience of the art is with each person, right? So enough people tell me it's dead. I know, okay, I'm pushing your button. What's going on? And I love pushing buttons, but that doesn't always, you know... I don't know. It just made a question in me. Not like, oh, drop the darkness, but what was it about those shapes and patterns that really that's what I'm starting to look at. You know, I'm not like you know, as a painter of realism, you learn to not see the object you're painting as a subject, like with
exactly.
a noun. You
right.
learn to see shapes and patterns and right. colors. And since that's just what you're working with, I sort of thought like, well, what if I do distill that down, right?
Nice.
And that's where I get the current stuff.
I have to admit, when I first forayed into just even trying to conceptualize abstract work, I did what I'm sure a lot of people have done, is where, you know, I'll take a picture and I'll flip it upside down and I'll try and paint it. Or I won't flip it upside down, I'll just try and paint it upside down in order to get to that abstraction. Tell us about your upcoming show. Where can people see your work currently? For how long?
Right, currently it's up through at Union Knot. Again, at Union and Knot, right next to Bridges Cafe. And it'll be up through the 2nd of April.
Nice.
And I'll have a closing party on the 2nd at around 6 o'clock to 8 or 9.
Great.
And I will be sitting the show on Mondays, Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays from roughly around 10 to around 3 or 4.
Okay.
And otherwise, it's closed. You can still look through the window
right.
and see it there. I'm going to do another show at Union Knot of the forested work because I thought I might just, I'm an abstract painter, I'll ditch it. You know, the younger me would have done that. But the older me like came back to the forested work and found it almost easier to do.
Nice.
Which was great. A very organic thing. Like, I don't want to, there's things you can force, there's things you don't have to force. But that's going to be in September or October. We haven't really calendared that yet.
Okay.
So that's why this exhibition is called Inside, and that one will be called Outside, because this one is sort of like the inside of my head trying to organize all my information,
right?
Which you brought to the macular cellular level, which I really appreciate. And so this return to the forest will be sort of the outside, and again a metaphor for our structure and culture as well.
Now you have a website as well for people who might not be able to make the show and don't want to wait until October to see.
Right, right. And it is a small site, but it is Carl Annala, CarlAnnala at carbonmade.com.
Great, 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 great. So, you know, we've got about maybe a couple of minutes left. One thing I'd love to dive into was that I read that you were a practitioner of Butoh dance.
Well, I have a foot on the path, as you could say. I got interested in Butoh, which is a modern Japanese dance form created by a man named Hijikata in the late 50s. And I discovered that in the mid 80s, early 80s, when the film Dance of Darkness was shown at the art school where I was attending, and the troupe Sankai Juku performed at PSU. And like a lot of people, I saw that and just was like, this is it. This is just the best thing for me ever. I have to do this. And in the 80s, people doing it were primarily just from Japan.
Okay.
And so I met a lot of resistance from people here saying, oh, you can't do that. That's not your pain to deal with. Well, now Butoh is a global art form. It's spread
far and wide.
There are huge festivals in Australia, Europe, everywhere. It dovetails with like Pina Bausch's work in dance theater in Germany in the 70s. But anyhow, so I ended up being able to study Buteau with a friend of mine, Andrew Fauché, in the mid-90s, early 90s, and we had a small troupe, and then we didn't perform much, although we danced together regularly. He went to grad school, and then I'd sort of used some of what I had learned in Buteau and to do other performance-like work, either in the cabaret scene, the fetish scene, or the rock and roll world, you know. And then recently, a friend of mine was interested in Buteau, and I was like, well, I think there's a troupe at the Headwaters Theater. I just had the vague sense of that from being at a concert there.
Right.
And miracle of Facebook, there it was, you know, connected with Mitsu, who runs the Water in the Desert dance programs there, and is a Buteau dancer, and soon learned that she was sponsoring a Buteau college there.
Nice.
At the Headwaters. And so for 4 weeks, starting last week, she has dancers flying in from Japan and San Francisco and places afar to teach week-long workshops.
Wow.
In Buteau.
Right.
And I was delighted to find that the first woman of Buteau was going to be there, Natsu Nakajima, and be able to take a class from her. And I had, you know, made a substantial art sale so I could afford to go. And I went all week, and it was just, you know, sort of like unscrews your head and leaves it over in the corner.
Right.
And is a it's a form that people see often and think like, oh, that's dark and strange and crazy. And you get the sense it's all like sort of free movement stuff when it's actually quite disciplined.
No, I can agree with that. I, you know, gotta love the internet. I went to YouTube and looked at some videos, yeah, and I was really drawn to the costumes, the makeup, the form, the strength, the power, the centeredness of it. There's a certain, you know, dare I say, gnomic, a monastery or a nomastic kind of
or
feel.
Shamanic feel to
exactly,
it.
Exactly.
There's
right.
There's a lot of connections to like shamanism and
right.
Buteau.
Right.
It's very earthy and very earthbound, very opposite of ballet.
Without
and,
a doubt, very vibratory. I mean, mm-hmm. I could totally see, you know, just waves of energy just, you know, subtly and slowly just emanating and then almost like ripples, like bouncing off each other.
Right.
Especially, I mean, because I've seen some videos where they're doing it, by, like, you know, there's just a singular person doing it, mm-hmm, and just yeah, interacting with the space.
Right.
And then I've seen, obviously, troops where there's people interacting with each other. Quite a powerful scene. Quite
right.
A powerful
and it will feel like you're underwater watching it, or the dancers are underwater. Everybody moving very slowly, undulating, and just that I personally like prepared for months doing yoga, you know, like to get limber enough. I'm a non-dancer really, but it's a form that accepts all body types and all body shapes. In fact, Natsu, who is 74,
wow,
and you know, a dancer, she works with the disabled in Japan teaching Buteau. So it's a safe place for people who are non-dancers to explore. But I really felt like 5 days, you know, I'm like 51, it's gonna kick my ass, and it did, and it was right, awesome. And it totally does inform the kind of performative things that I still do today. And I sort of mostly took it to inform my visual artwork.
Right.
And a lot of the things that the teacher was saying about, like, nothingness and you know, the unformed were right in line with what we know about abstract art and the informal, you know.
Nice. So we're going to wrap things up real quick. So I guess my last question would be, what is the question that you feel your work is trying to answer? You know, I mean, I think that that's like my go-to question. I mean, what's the question that you're saying? Hopefully if people see this, they'll hear the answer without even knowing what the question was in the beginning.
I think what I really want to offer is just a starting place for somebody to think about something that wasn't immediately on their mind.
Okay.
And it doesn't matter what that is. It's like just either that window into another world, and that you can start to tell a story from that point of when you start to view the work. It doesn't have to be the story that I put into the painting.
Right.
Because most likely nobody's going to get that. They're going to get something completely different. And so, you know, whether you see, you know, all the colors of eyeshadow in the world are laid out before you, or the New York skyline, or a microbiotic sample,
primordial.
You know? But I don't I think I'm just seeking for people to start asking rather than trying to figure out what any questions or answers are.
Because that sounds good.
To me, it's very much a pathway, and that these are you're able to see my steps on that path. That's the fortunate part of art.
Great. Hey, Carl, thank you so much for joining us today here at KB's.
Oh, you're welcome, Andre. This has been really fun.
I had a lot of fun doing it. So, hey, everybody. Just that wraps up our this current episode of Art Focus. You can find photos, links, as well as all the guest info on our show page. Just to wrap up, We Are Proud to Present has been extended through April 2nd at the Artist Repertory Theater. New Space Center for Photography is pleased to be hosting the traveling exhibition Prison Obscura. That's happening from April 1st through May 28th. The Regional Arts and Culture Council is seeking a team of 10 volunteers to help them conduct a nationwide study to measure the economic impact of nonprofit arts and art organizations. And there's going to be a training and info session on Tuesday, April 5th at RAC. If you missed any of today's show, please check out our podcast later online. Thank you. This is Andre Middleton signing off for KBOO's Art Focus. Take care and peace.
Proud co-sponsor of Smoldering Fires, produced by Passenart. The play runs from March 11th through April 10th at the Interstate Firehouse Cultural Center in Portland. Smoldering Fires explores how to apply the ideas and struggles of the civil rights movement to contemporary city life through the point of view of two young friends who differ in temperament and approach. Again, that's Smoldering Fires, March 11th through April 10th at the Interstate Firehouse Cultural Center, 5340 Northeast Interstate Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage.